You're listening to the Crispy Critics, and we're here today to review a CD by the Junior Boys, a Canadian duo that have just released their second album. It's called So This Is Goodbye. My name is Chris Hontos. I'm the music director, and I'm joined by Terry Lee, the program director.
Hello.
And assistant music director, Jason Schubert.
That's right.
And we're going to talk about the Junior Boys, as I said. It's an album that I am particularly fond of. In fact, I interviewed the band at their show a little while ago, and I'm going to air some of that after the discussion. But their first album was a huge critical success. I don't know if you remember this, but Pitchfork just went ape over it. You know, they just went crazy. Do you remember that at all?
I vaguely do. I remember trying to download it, and they had a lot of bunk copies floating around.
Yeah. Well, it was a huge critical success, like fueled by the internet and Pitchfork and, you know, websites and critics and stuff. The second album has gotten really good reviews as well, but is sort of moderately accepted. I think a lot of people are not sure about it. But, I mean, to me, it sounds exactly the same. It's a great album, and it consists of the two guys, Jeremy Greenspan on vocals and Matt DeDamus helping out with production.
One of the things that I noticed, I mean, I wasn't turned on to the group and not even aware of them until we got the EP in here first.
Yeah.
And they had some of the album cuts on there from their album, and then they had some of the remixes, and it was so enjoyable to listen to. It was just like, just grooving.
Yeah.
You know, every time you listen to it, it's just, it's a really fantastic album to just, I mean, if you put it in the club and just played it all the way through,
yeah,
it'd be fantastic the entire time.
And that's what their live experience is like. It's a lot like a club, and it's not... The thing that I like about it is that I don't like club music. I don't like electronic, you know, crap like that. I call it crap, you know, well, frankly,
this,
like
this
ravey.
This is definitely not that cheesy pop sound. It's
exactly.
It has something to say. That it's, from what everything that's comprised of the what it sounds like.
Right. It's sort of subtle and emotional, and it's definitely going to appeal more to people into like indie rock, I think, than you know, techno. Even though it will definitely cross those boundaries. One thing I'd like to say about the album is that it has a level of depth and sophistication that you're definitely not going to find in a similar act, a similar electronic, indie rock electronic sort of act like the Postal Service, also a duo and also pretty spectacularly popular. But they're definitely a lot more on the pop side of things. And the thing you're going to find with the Junior Boys is that there's an atmosphere and a mood that is just really, really, really great to hear, and is definitely not going to be found on an album like the Postal Service's album or a similarly like-minded electronic indie sort of duo act.
So it kind of has a somber tone to it as well. Would you say it's kind of not really necessarily depressing because it's got a little euphoria to it too? But I mean, you know,
yeah, exactly. That's what I. That's exactly what I would say.
So another fine Canadian import. That's they seem to be doing us well.
The thing that I think about this album is that if you like New Order and you think, but you still acknowledge that New Order is unbearably cheesy and ridiculously crappy and yet good at the same time, you'll probably be able to appreciate the Junior Boys.
Early New Order, late New Order, all New Order?
This sort of generalizes an all New Order, but particularly the mid-era, the mid-80s, late 80s era where they really got clubby.
Yeah, I noticed on the review that you... say it's good driving music, and I would have to say off of the cuts we're hearing, definitely it seems like something you pop in for a long drive and kind of chill to enjoy.
It always gave me images of like driving through the city at night, which is why I wrote that. But it's like it just makes me think of being in like an urban environment. It's definitely urban sort of music, and it's really like nighttime laid back and cool and stuff. But this new album has some more bumpin' stuff too, some more like club ready party jams in a way. But anyways, we're going to take a listen to the interview I conducted with Jeremy Greenspan, the main man behind the Junior Boys at the 400 Bar just a few weeks ago. And he talked a lot about the recording process as well as the touring process and the new album. So here's an interview with Jeremy Greenspan of the Junior Boys. You're only going to find it on the Crispy Critics.
I prefer to be in the studio, but more than saying I prefer it, it's like The studio is a, you know, when you're working in a studio, it's a creative process that's going on. So you're fulfilling the creative part of yourself, and that's what the artistic process is about. For some bands, when they perform live, they're you know, they get a sort of creative satisfaction out of playing live, often because they have like a large amount of improvisation they do, or they think of themselves more as performers than they do maybe as writers or something like that.
Yeah.
For us, when we perform, we're you know, it's more like we're trying to sort of bring the Junior Boys experience to a live audience. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, the live performance, other than when we're sort of working out how to do it live, is not really a creative process. So it doesn't satisfy like the creative part of myself. It satisfies like the having fun side of myself, probably much more so than being in a studio. But I don't think of it as like being as like nearly the same in terms of like. If you think of, if I think of myself as like some kind of an artist or something like that, it can be very hectic on tour. And so, you know, we sort of know why we tour, and we have a very clear idea as to what it's for and what its purpose is. And its purpose is much more about satisfying our audience than it is about satisfying ourselves, because ultimately, you know, like being in the studio, that's sort of something for us, and that's. And that's, we find that personally satisfying. Being on tour is lots of fun in lots of ways. You get to meet new people, but it's very stressful. And it's very, and when you're a band like us that doesn't just plug into amplifiers and go, it requires a lot of technology that can be fragile and that has to work together well, especially with us, where, for better or worse, we sort of insist on certain sort of authentic technologies and things that really aren't meant to be on the road. We have, you know, certain synthesizers, certain effects processors that we use that are like quite fragile, quite temperamental, and we could probably go with like more durable, road-ready versions of those kinds of things, but we don't like the sound of them. So it can be very stressful for us, and as a band, we are prone to technical problems all the time, and so we have to adapt and try and deal with that as much as possible. And we have had some technical mishaps along the way, but basically, yeah, the idea of touring for us is basically to communicate with the people, with like our fans, and be able to give them a show and come out and, you know, like for example, when I made my first album, I never thought that I'd ever tour it or play live.
Okay, do you mean Last Exit?
Yeah, it wasn't a concern for me at all.
Yeah.
It was only after it got signed and all that that the label was like, so are you going to tour it? And I was like, well, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And they sort of thought, they sort of said, well, you know what, think again.
Yeah.
So after that happened, we sort of slopped together a show.
Uh-huh.
And now with this new album, we really knew that we were going to tour it. And so we spent a lot more time thinking about what we should do live and how we should approach doing it and try and make it into something far better than what we had done before.
Do you think that's really affected the sound of the new album?
Yes and no. No, it hasn't, in the sense that we didn't really change how we approached writing, but yes in the sense that some of the songs that we did, we had played live at some point before they were recorded, and so we had some thoughts about how to pursue them. And also, the album, just coincidentally, has a kind of a slightly liver feel than the last one, only because we were using a lot more actual equipment, as opposed to making an album that was, you know, completely sort of isolated into a computer, which is how the first album was made.
Okay.
So when you're using a lot more sort of outboard equipment, there's a sort of a liveness that kind of happens. And you'll hear with our record, there's all these sort of buzzing, there's all that sort of buzzing electricity of live, sometimes vintage, sometimes not, but sort of outboard equipment.
Yeah, the new album does, to me, sound a lot more like that, as opposed to the first one, which sounds like it was done both a computer.
I mean, both of them ultimately were done with a computer, in the sense that all of those live instruments were all put into a computer, and we're the kind of band that sort of relies heavily on digital processing and on digital arrangement tools and things like that. But but because we were using the real synthesizers particularly, and also we were using the sort of and some of the older synthesizers, some of them have sort of ingrained, built-in, primitive sequencers inside of them.
Yeah.
And so we would sometimes use those sequencers in conjunction with, you know, the software sequencers. Mm-hmm. And that so also gives it a kind of a strange flow. The thing for me that I like about using real equipment, so to speak, is that there's far more there's sort of far more quirks and happy coincidences that happen when you're fiddling with real things, as opposed to simulations. With the simulations, they've gotten so good now that you can often nurture little quirks and and things out of them.
But, dither effect or something.
Yeah, but with the with the real thing, you never know what the synth might do. It can do something completely. I mean, basically, all of these pieces of equipment have their own personality. They have their own limitations and their own design flaws, which brings about usually interesting creative moments.
Okay. So I want to say something about the fact that you've gotten really good press, typically, in the last album and this album, is the role of, you know, the critics has been pretty significant, I think, in public awareness of the band. So what do you think is the role of, you know, critics in modern music, and what do you think of that?
Well, I've noticed something kind of funny about this new record, which is that basically a lot of the online-based magazines like the record a lot. And the worst press that we've received on this record has all been from, like, sort of, kind of, what I'd consider the more lame mainstream magazines. Like Spin, for example, gave us a panning, you know?
Oh, really? Well, you know, don't take that seriously.
I didn't take it too seriously. I know the guy, I don't know him personally, but I know the writer, and I certainly didn't take him that seriously.
Yeah.
But I sort of think that when we made the first record, we had this sort of, like, unanimous kind of good feedback about it.
Yeah.
And I was always kind of suspicious of the mainstream rock magazines that would write good things about it. I always sort of felt like they were, like, sort of just saying so because, you know, because we were getting good press from what they thought were, like, sort of hip, young magazines.
Yeah.
And with this one, they sort of felt as though they could really say what they really thought.
Yeah,
which is that they don't like it. And I suspect that those critics didn't even like the first album.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so I was always sort of suspicious of them.
Yeah.
The press, I mean, there's been certain people, since certain magazines online, like Stylus and Pitchfork magazine and Pop Matters and a few other ones that are online-based that have been very supportive of us and then people will come up to me and say, "Oh, I heard about you via this online magazine," and so those have been fantastic for us because they've basically given us a career, so to speak.
So between the first album and the new one, you know, what kind of differences did you went into it? Considering it was, like you said, you weren't planning on releasing the first one or whatever. You didn't have that in mind.
I think particularly with this new album, we were listening to a lot of disco music and a lot less sort of R&B and hip-hop music, and I think that sort of shift kind of managed to show itself a little bit in the music that we were making. A fundamental difference was the equipment that we chose to use to make this album. Well, first of all, we had a choice, you know, because, you know, the label, you know, gave us a budget, so we were able to buy things that we never would have been able to afford before. And also, we learned a lot of things making the first album, a lot of sort of mistakes that I'd had to live with, and I felt as though I could sort of correct to some extent. I mean, Matt was involved in the last album quite a bit, a lot more than he's given credit for. We sort of know each other very well. We don't really communicate all that much when we're making music together. I think we know each other really well, and we sort of let each other do our own thing, and then we sort of consolidate things that we've worked on independently at some point during the process. Forever, I mean, we come from a dance music tradition. That's that's what we grew up listening to. That's sort of fundamentally what we're interested in. But we don't sort of see ourselves as being part of, like, modern dance music. It's, because it's too, for me, it's too frantic and too, like, it's too adrenaline-based. And I wanted to have something that was more even-spaced. But I don't like, I don't want down-tempo music. I hate it when people call us, like, down-tempo or chill-out music. But it is, like, more spaced out. And I think that, like, part of that was, we really listen to disco and listen to what they were doing. And a lot of disco music and early house music is at a completely different tempo than people are using right now. Mm-hmm. And it's at a tempo that most people don't use anymore. It's like 110 to 120 BPM.
Sort of the middle of the line.
Exactly. It's too slow to be mixed with contemporary house music.
Yeah.
So for that reason alone, we knew that we weren't going to be played in dance clubs because house DJs are very conservative about what they'll play, and they're very... very technical, and they only play stuff that they can beat match and whatever. So we knew that it wasn't going to be played in that context, and we were quite happy about that.
Yeah.
So we sort of think of ourselves as sort of kind of dance-based pop music. Mm-hmm. And seeing as we think of ourselves that way, it gives us a lot of flexibility to be more creative and to not worry about, you know, what the house scene is going to think about us, or what the techno scene or whatever is going to think about us, because ultimately we're not particularly interested. Leave a place to rest on. I'm not very good at answering where our best places to play. I'm much better at answering where are the worst places we play.
Where are the worst?
I won't get into that.
Okay.
I can assure you, it's not Minneapolis.
You're right, yeah. Understand. Okay, cool. Well, thanks a lot for your time, Jim.
Thank you.
Cool.
Steady's brand new album. It's called Boys and Girls in America, and we're going to do a little round robin table discussion here about the album. It's the band's second release, and third release, sorry. Luke looks up at me.
It's okay. I keep wanting to go. Sorry.
Yeah,
so ruined your show. I've ruined your show moments in.
I'm leaving.
I'm not editing this out, you know.
Okay. Good.
Okay. So we're talking about The Boys and Girls in America. It's the Hold Steady's third album, and it's a smoker.
It is,
to say the least.
Yes.
Luke, star DJ on KVSC, what do you have to say about the album in 50 words or less?
In 50 words or less?
You just used 7.
I know. 9, it's just going to keep building. It's a great record. I'm a big Hold Steady fan, so I'm really biased.
Yeah.
And whenever we do these things, it's bad to do them with records you really love because, you know, you're going to be biased. But the Hold Steady is a fabulous band, and this is their third record, and it really builds on the first two. It sees Craig Finn, the singer formerly of Lifter Puller from Minneapolis, really going into more of like a more singing and more of a, I don't know how you'd say it.
It's a different approach, I think, and it's one that totally works. A lot of people are going to say, there's going to be a backlash because it's different from the other two Hold Steady records, but to me, it works, and they're rolling with it, and it's totally kick-ass.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely more of an accessible sound, I think, than the first two records are. You know, whether that's a good thing or not, you know, it's a little more of like a kind of live, crowd-pleasing kind of record.
Yeah, there's a lot more anthems. It's really anthemic. Every single song is just a jam, and it's something you could sing along to, and there's the piano flourishes that weren't there in the other album. And, you know, the comparisons that the mainstream press are making to The Boss, Bruce Springsteen, I don't think are that great, and they're not that good to say, but there is definitely a little bit of The Boss in some of those songs. Some working-class anthems, you know what I mean?
Of course.
More stadium rock, less bar rock is the way you're going with number three.
It's a little something like that, yeah, because they are basically the world's best bar band right now. You know, they'll turn any bar into a total party atmosphere.
This is true.
So long as you, because, you know, every Hold Steady show I've ever seen, it's been like 95% of the audience just screaming every lyrics, like every lyric to every song. And that's the atmosphere. That's the ecstatic, crazy fans of the Hold Steady, you know.
Especially though, I mean, having seen them obviously in Minnesota, it's a little different around here since they're all Minnesota boys, you know. And the band's currently based in New York, but it definitely has a, no matter how long they've been away or wherever they move to, whenever they play here, no matter what band they're in, it's always a very hometown rowdy atmosphere.
Yeah,
which makes for a great show.
Absolutely. I mean, and the reason I think most people still consider them a Minnesota or Minneapolis band is because of all the references to Minneapolis in all their songs.
Oh, absolutely.
And they haven't even let up whatsoever. Like, you, the first half of the album, there's like three references to the Mississippi River. There's references to Lindale, to Hennepin. Yeah. You know, there's all this sorts of stuff going on. So. Yeah. I'm waiting. I've yet to hear a New York reference.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's you know, obviously Craig Finn writes a lot of his music kind of around stories and characters and things like that, that he, you know, tries to create these stories with his records. You know, he had a whole set of characters when he was in Lifter Puller, and then now in Hold Steady, it's a whole new cast.
The eye patch guy.
Yeah. One of the great ones. But, and now with this new set of characters, again, it's based in Minneapolis. And like you said, some of the songs, the last song on the album, South Town Girls, is almost completely nothing but references to Minneapolis roadways and things, you know, and it's great. It's great fun.
Yeah, it's a really fun album. It's their first album for Vagrant. Mm-hmm. So they've kind of made the leap, which is fine, you know, whatever. It's on a major label, but yeah, Vagrant is a pretty sickening label when you look at their roster.
Well, I don't know if I'd quite go as far as sickening. They have had their bright moments, you know.
Paul
Westerberg being
the bright moment.
One of them, but... You know, Vagrant Records, you know, I commend them for putting out such a great record. You know, it was kind of an odd choice for the Hold Steady.
Yeah, but, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's kind of a weird decision.
Yeah, but it's definitely pushing them out to a whole new audience, and it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see where this goes. Yeah.
Well, that's the idea, I think, is to push them out into a new audience, you know, because...
The critics have been loving them for years.
Yeah.
And now I think it's kind of, it's maybe going to finally start getting out there to the kids. You know?
Yeah. That's the other thing about the Hold Steady is that they've had such huge critical success.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I have no idea why, because they sound so normal. And that's what I thought about Lifter Puller when I first heard them. And I was like, wow, this sounds just like a regular rock band, you know?
Yeah.
But there's so much more to, personality.
Yeah,
to them.
And I think they're so much more clever than a typical rock band.
Exactly.
You know? And
people... that's why they can sort of ironically go back to the Boss's style, or this sort of straightforward bar rock style, which is kind of dumb almost. I mean, some people think it is anyway.
Yeah.
And they're totally clever, and they're totally smart enough to make it totally fun.
Yeah. Totally. No, it's interesting. They do. They have a lot of interesting kind of, like you said, references to like the Boss and things, you know, just thinking about that and like the way they've resided in New York and kind of made their home there, even though they're Minneapolis based people.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because in New York, they actually, with their critical acclaim, they, when the last record came out, the critics were hailing it, you know, as, you know, one of the great new bands. And they were actually on the cover of the Village Voice out in New York, and they were actually the first band or the first musical artist to be on the cover of Village Voice in New York since Bruce Springsteen 20 years earlier.
That's
which is kind of interesting.
Deal.
But yeah, we should talk a little more about the music, about the differences in the albums and things like that.
I think there's the main difference between this album and the last one is the anthemic piano balladry that is sort of punctuates a lot of the songs. as opposed to the straightforward indie rock, just like huge riffs, big power chord sound of the last two releases.
Mm-hmm.
The vocals are basically the same, except
basically
for there's
the
some singing,
there
like
is,
you
there
said.
There is more singing, more harmonies, things like that. You know, it's much more of like the kind of album that's going to be a sing-along. And
there's backup
and,
vocals
yeah,
in a lot
and,
of the songs.
And the structure of the songs is so much more, I think, more tight and layered. You know, it's like, you know, the other ones had a little more, maybe a little more of an abrasive feel to them because of like the structure of the songs. You know, it was a little more like jagged here and there.
Yeah.
And which I kind of liked, but this new record is definitely much more smoothed over, and they've really honed their particular style of songwriting. You know,
they're playing the only on their whole U.S. tour. The only place they're playing two nights in a row is, of course, Minneapolis at First Avenue.
Yeah,
and it's going to be sold out. It's going to be an awesome show.
Oh yeah. And, even from New York, you know, they're based on New York, and even there, they're only doing one night, I think, at the Bowery Ballroom. And so, it'll be an interesting couple days.
You ever seen the Hold Steady live, Jason?
I did. I saw him at the Triple Rock with Stephanie, and it was quite fantastic. But, it was packed, and it was quite the show.
Yeah. Yeah, they're something live. And at First Avenue, last time I saw them at First Avenue, they were playing with, they were headlining, and they played with Brother Ali for the City Pages anniversary party.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so out of control. I just remember at one point just standing kind of to the back of where the kids were really throwing each other around. And it was like, it looked like it was raining beer. There was just beer everywhere. And it was like, people were just running around. One guy ran past me in the middle. They were playing Most People Are DJs, you know, a very rowdy song off the first record. And a man ran past me. Just screaming, just, yeah! And he was just dumping two beers on his own head. And it was like, wow.
That's
this band is really getting to people.
That's the kind of things that their fans will do, though. Like, yes. Everyone that likes, you either like them, no, I should say, you either love them, or you just don't really get it.
Yeah.
You know? Because the people that like them are just insanely in love with them, and they sing along to every song. They have such a quality sing-along quality to their music, and if you don't get them, well, you're missing out big time.
Yeah, it's one of those bands that either they grab you or they don't.
Yeah.
You know, and if they don't, fine. If they do, then you know what we're talking about.
Exactly. So the new album by the Hold Steady is their third release. It's called Boys and Girls in America, and I'd say it's a tie for their best record. I think their last album was probably better than the first one, and this one is exactly tied with the last one. What would you give it?
I can't make those kind of statements because these records, I'm such a fan. I'm such a geek about Craig Finn and any band he's been in, basically. They're all, these records are like my children. I can't judge them apart from each other, but I do love the new record quite a bit.
And you, Jason?
I do enjoy it. I enjoy the cautionary tales that they throw at you in each disc.
I bet you like the literary experience more than the rock action.
I did enjoy the first one quite a bit.
The first
I didn't really,
is outstanding.
I didn't get as into Separation Sunday, but the first one I was, you know, just playing it all the time. And there's so many. It's so quotable. Everything that they have is quotable.
It's a quote party.
That's a great way to put it, Chris. It's a quote party. The Hold Steady.
Quote jam. Craig Finn writes quote jams.
Okay. Do you see this beautiful girl in the studio?
I just made eye contact.
Are you talking about over here?
No, right.
Are you talking about
to your right?
You've already got a girl.
I know. I'm completely.
I'm going to record this and give it.
This
to
is
Jim.
Going on.
No,
the air.
I'm allowed to say a girl is.
This
attractive.
Is going on the air.
Okay.
Thank you.
The Hold Steady's third album is called Boys and Girls in America, and you should check it out on Vagrant Records. It's a fantastic album.
What else can you say?
That's kind of a bad
idea. No, that's the exact way you should end it. Booyah! End of show.
All right, that's it. Thanks.
I was not involved up at the Northtown Mall. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know that that's where it happened. Out when they came out dancing, I was in down south, I was kicking it with cousins. We were talking about going clubbing, but instead we just started drinking. Nothing straight since the Cinco de Mayo, but before that I was blotto, I was blacked out, I was cracked out, I was caping.
You should have seen all these portals that I powered up in. Started recreational and it kind of medical. It came out hot and soft and then it tightened up its tentacles. Columbus, I was cutting off all my hair. I was unfurling a flag of defiance aimed at my guiding sky. So this is it, this is the end of the session. I ain't gonna be taking any more questions. I think my attorney's gonna second that notion. Start a recreational.